everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Normally, I would respond to that knock about being cheap, because I'm merely careful, but I say put Jack Klugman in that Emmy salute, don't you?
Okay, yes, go ahead.
All right.
And you are cheap, and so there's nothing about caution.
It's
all cheap.
Talking over
cheap,
me.
Cheap.
God. The ride home's going to be fun. All right, so we got a big show made even bigger by the fact that we have a celebrity chef sitting in with us.
A celebrity chef.
Oh, come on, guys. Chef and restaurateur Robert Wiedemeyer joins us as kind of the third wheel. It says here third heel in the
third
script.
Third wheel.
But he's our co-host.
Well, you know why we decided to make you a co-host? Because whenever we book you to come on the show, you take it over anyway. So it's like, while you're
here. I'm going to nap out right now.
I just have too much to stay.
Robert is the chef owner of Marcel's and Bravo and Brasserie Beck and the Muscle Bar in Bethesda and the new one in Arlington. You've got two restaurants in Revel?
I've got one restaurant in the Revel in Atlantic City, and then I've got in the Kimpton Hotel Bravo in the tasting room.
Right. And we're going to find out when we talk to you later about Chefs Go Fresh. What?
Well, we're going to a very high-profile
gay
wedding.
Shout out.
David Hagedorn and Michael Wadomski this afternoon.
Yes.
And I'm thinking maybe you get rid of Polly, I get rid of Nikki.
And you and I go together?
You got all these restaurants and money.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm going to have a lot of anxiety going to this tonight.
We have to wear
I'm going to look hot.
You can wear your sunglasses.
Congratulations, David and Michael.
Congratulations, David and Michael.
Very excited for tonight.
We can't wait.
And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is presiding. That's going to be great.
It's going to be fun.
She's my hero.
Okay. Can we get on with the show, please, gentlemen? Later in the show, we are talking to Molly Katzen. She's got a new book. You know her from the Moosewood Cookbook, but she's got a new one called The Heart of the Plate. We're going to get into that with her. And why is the food at the Montgomery County School so terrible? We have kids in Montgomery County. Your kids go to private school.
Really bad.
So we brought in Lindsay Parsons, Gordon Clark, and Karen Devitt. They are with Real Food for Kids Montgomery. It's a grassroots parents group. I'm going to become a part of it because it is time for not just nutritious food to be in our schools, but tasty food as well.
And Joe Tiss... Save that, Robert.
I was just going to say something real quick, but you stopped me. I just said we should be ashamed of ourselves for what we're serving kids in schools.
It's like airplane food, hospital food.
Save your faux anger for later. All right, Joe Tiss is the chef at Paladar. Is a great new Cubano restaurant and rum bar across from Whole Foods in right at the Bethesda Rockville line, and he's in with us to talk Latin
across
flavors.
The street from Whole Foods.
Yeah. But we're going to have some exotic...
I can smell it behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And Domingo Martin Barreras is the new mixologist at J&G in the W Hotel. He's really the visiting mixologist. And they're launching a new concept, which includes a new lineup of cocktails. And it'll be our pleasure and Robert's, I think, to preview cocktails for you. Amen. And if we stay sober, it'll be a miracle.
Domingo, let's
start with you. First of all, welcome to Washington.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you were voted one of the top 10 most inspired bartenders in the 2010 competition held by Bombay Sapphire, one of our favorite ingredients. And GQ put you in the U.S. Bartenders Guild, so... You know your cocktails. How did all that happen? Did you grow up in a cocktail farm?
No. I mean, my folks drank, surely, but I think I was an only child, so.
That's probably why
idle hands. I like science and booze, and it's kind of where I ended up, I think. But I've been doing it for a long time, and it's been very much, I found cocktail bars are now very much an extension of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So once I started going that route, it all sort of makes sense. I have an art school background, and.
Right. You said you went to the school in Boston, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I went to Simmons.
Yeah.
We were in the same area.
Yep.
So tell us, though, now that you are into cocktails, like, how do you play? Are you like a mad scientist? Is there a method to your madness?
It depends. A lot of times is for what we're going with here.
Mm-hmm.
Geared towards something. Right. Well, we're doing a martini cart, so I thought kind of something classic and classy. like the Vesper, Ian Fleming, James Bond, and threw some gold in there. I mean,
that's
the gold
because
finger,
I'm here,
you know?
Right?
Yeah, but you're
that? That's because I'm here. And
right.
Well, yeah.
I
yeah,
understand.
You know,
yeah.
And you're going to be all dressed up later, so I figured you might want to have something to...
Not like James Bond. Fat James Bond.
Well, why a martini card? Tell us a little bit about that.
You want to take this?
Yeah.
Marcus Carlson.
Marcus, why don't you come up to the mic?
Yeah. Hello, everybody. It's the martini carts. It's something classic. You know, it's you got a beautiful steakhouse. This beautiful two martini carts, as a matter of fact.
Okay, but what is? I mean, is a martini cart something from another point in time? I don't think I've ever seen a martini cart before, Robert.
No, I have not. But I think it's a great idea, though, because I'm telling you now, people love martinis.
Yeah, I mean, there's something probably, about bringing it right to you,
right? And it's done right in front of you. I'm assuming that you're doing it right in front at the table there. And you know, I just know from my restaurants, are probably one of our number one cocktail drinks is the martini.
I'm just projecting. I think an idea just got stolen. But just
I would
up.
Never do that.
No, never.
But
we
you
don't
could.
Do that. We don't poach
no.
cooks. We don't steal. We don't.
It's going to be a martini bicycle.
No,
everything
not
we
a bicycle.
Do is original.
Uh-huh.
I think part of the cool selling point for it too is that, you know, it's pushed up to every table, mm-hmm. and on the cart we have a. Some cool frozen bottle molds. We have 8 different garnishes with stuffed olives and onions and peppadews and
that makes it
everything
fun.
You can imagine.
Right. Cool. All right.
Nice.
Well, Domingo, what are you making first?
So we're actually going to do a take on a Vesper, which
okay.
is gin, vodka, and Lillet.
Mm-hmm.
But because we've changed the ratios, make it a little more approachable, I think, upping the Lillet, bringing the gin down. I mean, again, I'm a huge fan of Sapphire, but I just think as maybe a gateway martini.
Mm-hmm.
And then in keeping with the Ian Fleming, Vesper, James Bond, we put some edible gold dust in there as well.
Pretty.
Which visually, it's really fun.
After the show, I'm going to be wiping every glass with a towel.
Remember, he's cheap. He's cheap and he's smart.
That's right. All right, well, while you're doing that, let's okay. turn to Robert. The last time Nikki and I saw Robert, we were all butt deep in mud at Border Springs Farm out in southwestern Virginia at Lambstock, and you were...
You were having a good time.
You were very animated, I'll say that.
I tell you, that was a blast. I mean, for those of you who don't know about Lambstock, I think that was the
third
annual
Lambstock. Well, they would, because they've listened to the two shows that we just did, just so you know.
That was a subtle insult. Of course they know.
So, you know, we had a great time, and I was so happy that you two were there. And we had some very in-depth talks about food and wine and the food industry.
We did. It was terrific.
And the radio industry.
I think
why
you
we
had
can't
in
play
depth,
rock and roll anymore.
You had in-depth talks with Nikki. I think I was drinking all the booze. And
you were swigging back the
moonshine.
Yeah, I said
go interview somebody.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you've got some other stuff. Now we're kind of looking forward. You've got an event called Chefs Go Fresh on the 30th.
That's correct. That's in conjunction with the Georgetowner with Sandra Bernhardt. And this will be our third time hosting that at Brasserie Beck. And basically...
Yeah, explain it because it started from... Chefs on Bikes,
I don't know
right?
how we started. It says I'm the co-founder of Chefs on Bikes and all that stuff. I mean,
right.
we just used to meet at Marcel's, me and a bunch of chefs. And
I
we
went
used to,
1 year.
And we'd go ride around and you know, go look for barbecue and stuff like that. But anyway, it evolved to what it is today. Now it's, you know, thank God the Georgetowner took it on. Otherwise, it might not even be around.
Right.
But we meet at Beck's and anybody can come. You don't have to be on a motorcycle. You can show up there. They're going to have a bus there to take people around Maryland this time again, and it's sponsored by the Maryland Agriculture and the DNR from Fisheries in Maryland. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, last year we had breakfast at Beck's, and then we ended up at Brian Vitaggio's family meal place, and we
mm-hmm.
had you know whole roasted you know lamb from Craig Rogers
mm-hmm.
Down there at Lambstock, and it's just a blast. It's a lot of fun. And every time we've done, we've had great weather.
So
let's
who's coming? Like, what chefs are going to be there? Do you know?
Probably the same cast of characters
mm-hmm.
most of the time, like RJ and David Guas, Cliff Wharton. There's a bunch of guys. I just can't. I'll miss people. And say, Robert, why didn't you mention me?
Can any chef with a motorcycle join in?
Any chef can come. Luigi comes on his moped.
But you don't even need
a
motorcycle.
Go get a bike.
But there is because they are inviting other people to come. So
yeah, you
can't
don't
get
have
on the bus.
You don't have to be on a motorcycle. You can come and just enjoy and follow in the car or get on the bus. And it's just a great day of eating, drinking, and socializing.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. I wish I could go. It's on the 30th, right? September 30th?
September 30th.
Yeah, that's why I can't go.
We meet at Brasserie Beck at 9 o'clock.
It sounds. And who picks all the farms and everything? Is that all Sandra?
You know what? I kind of let Sandra do all that.
Okay, I was curious.
And Victoria Michaels, I think, they both did that together.
Okay.
And it sounds like it's going to be a really good trip this time.
I'm sure it is.
It always is. Can I change subjects? Because
yes.
Obviously, Muscle Bar in Bethesda is hitting it over the fence because you've just opened another one. So... tell me about that.
Okay, so we opened up at 800 Glebe Road in Arlington, or Ballston, as some call it, at the old Bob Peck Chevrolet spot where many, many people bought their cars for,
and that's on Wilson Boulevard?
800 Glebe.
Glebe.
800 Glebe. So it's basically, it's you know, the Muscle Bar Bethesda on steroids. It's bigger,
yeah, you said it's
nicer.
Bigger, it looks totally different, right?
It's got a lot more natural sunlight coming in. It's got lots of windows. We have 120 Belgian beers and... a lot of, you know, American crafted beers there and a great wine list. And, of course, we serve lots of mussels from Penn Cove, Washington State.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to say, just as an aside, and I know you're Belgian, that it's really gratifying to know that Belgium is now famous for beer and famous for something other than being rolled over by the Germans every couple
of
decades.
Well, you know, every big war was fought in Belgium.
Yes,
it's like, let's have a war.
They weren't really
Belgium.
Fought. They weren't really fought. They just used it like a highway to get to France.
It was a playground for wars. yeah, well, that's true though. And chocolate, don't forget the chocolate.
Yes, I forgot about your chocolate.
Beer, chocolate, and food.
All right, and talk about the restaurant up at Revel, because
Revel was the second muscle bar that we opened up in the Revel Hotel in Atlantic City, which is right on the water. It's a beautiful hotel with a gorgeous casino, and the muscle bar there is really, really just unbelievable when you go to see that place. I've got my chopper hanging above the bar. We have a stage. We bring in, you know, rock and roll bands.
Andy and I are putting together a band, by the way.
Oh, you are? Can I sing? Can I play the harmonica?
60-year-old white guys. What
Hey, Andy's not that old yet.
But yeah, if you want to go up to Atlantic City, go to the Revel, go to the Muscle Bar. Mm-hmm. There's some other great restaurants in there. I mean, it's a fun place. It's only 3 hours from here.
Right. No, and it's a nice little getaway, an overnight getaway.
You know, like if there's a nice concert playing up there, I mean, it's great to go to Ovation Hall. It only sits 4,000 people, see a concert, and go eat and come home the next day. So,
and
or stay longer.
Muscles. All right.
All right. Are we ready?
Break.
Oh, we
yeah.
do. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to, of course, have Robert. I'm afraid to drink this drink. It smells really
potent. It's going to start our day well.
It's really going to start it off.
I took a hit.
I could see
I'm
the gold.
Flying.
But when we come back, we'll be talking with Molly Katzen with the Heart of the Plate. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Come celebrate Central Farm Market's 5th anniversary season with the freshest produce, dairy, baked goods, fresh fish, meats, poultry, and specialty foods around. Enjoy music, wine tastings, cooking demos and classes, and kids' activities at two great locations, Sundays 9 to 1 in downtown Bethesda and Saturdays from 9 to 2 in North Bethesda, Rockville. Come out and see for yourself why Washingtonian and Bethesda magazines hail the markets as the best in the metro area. To learn more and sign up for the weekly e-blast, visit www.centralfarmmarkets.com. The two central locations in downtown Bethesda and North Bethesda, Rockville are kid-friendly and dog-friendly, have plenty of parking, and great food. For a listing of food artisans, events, and exact addresses, check out www.centralfarmmarkets.com. That's centralfarmmarkets.com. See you this weekend.
Soldiers returning with traumatic brain injuries or other serious battle wounds often spend weeks or months in a VA hospital or other rehab facility. DVDs for Vets is collecting DVDs and portable players for distribution in our community and nationwide. Many of us take for granted our access to everyday enjoyments, and DVDs for Vets needs your help in giving these injured soldiers some diversions from the monotony of a hospital stay during recovery. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to www.dvdsforvets.org.
On Thursday, October 17th, join the Wounded Warrior Project for the Red, White, and Barbecue Charity Golf Event. The funds raised will assist service members who have been injured in the line of duty. All proceeds from the Red, White, and Barbecue Charity Golf Event will be donated to the nonprofit organization Wounded Warrior Project and will support a full range of programs and services for this generation of injured veterans and their families. For more information, visit redwhiteandbarbecue.com. That's redwhiteandbarbecue.com.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis and our guest host, Robert Wiedemeyer. James Beard nominated chef. Robert
well, Wiedemeyer. I was nominated for best service from ourselves.
Same thing.
Well,
why, do you,
matter.
Why do you edit me? Don't.
Well, because
they'll never know. That's okay.
I just want to be, you know,
clear.
Correct.
All right. I want to be clear.
And in
I
a minute,
that.
We're going to be joined by Molly Katzen. But first, we're going to go back to Domingo because you just poured a cocktail that is.
A coupe full of liqueur. That's what it is.
Accidenti. That's some cocktail.
Thank very,
you.
Very
Thank
tasty.
You. I'm glad you like. You're happy, I'm happy.
Right. Yes. It smells, I mean,
very
but it's strong.
This is what I want to have right when we walk into the wedding tonight.
Okay.
Party
so,
tonight.
Well, question. Jeff Fell is there, so I think he'll be in good shape.
Oh, yeah, good.
More,
right?
So, Domingo, tell me, so the W Hotel, the J&G, we were there for the opening, and we were very familiar.
Yeah, but there's a huge relaunch.
I know. Well, that's what I was getting at. You're relaunching the whole concept for the restaurant, and I assume for the cocktail menu as well. So tell us about that.
We kind of wanted to build our classic cocktails and do some different spins on the cocktails. You know, we have a fig sidecar. We wanted to play with some different fall flavors.
Mm-hmm.
We have a rosemary and pear Ricky. Obviously, the Ricky being known to Washington,
D.C. Yeah, of course.
We have our signature cocktail for Bar 515.
Mm-hmm.
Is the French 515.
Okay.
What we're doing next.
It's our spin on...
What was that, Domingo?
It's what we're doing next.
Oh, is that what you're doing next?
I'm going to bring you off the booze cloud and kind of mellow you out a little bit.
I like the booze cloud.
We're going to go from one booze cloud to another booze cloud? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. Okay. Hanging fruit on this one.
Okay. And we've actually built a new bar, actually, upstairs in the J&G Steakhouse.
Yeah, because
the dining room.
There was no bar up there before.
No.
Because you had the upstairs bar at the W and POV. And then you have the downstairs wine bar.
It scares me that my wife knows exactly how many bars you have. It's frightening.
It's what I do for a living. Why would I not know?
But I tell you what, you got to come in and see it. It really just ties the whole room together. It just brings a lot of energy into that room.
I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
All right.
Well, you get to making that cocktail.
And Molly Katzen, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So we have with us Molly Katzen, who... turned the world around on vegetables about 35, 40 years ago. Molly, this, of course, will not matter to you, but we came within an inch of knowing each other because I was accepted at Ithaca, and I would have been there when you guys were there and you were doing all this, and it kills me. Because
it totally matters to me.
Doesn't? I love
but our son, that. But our son went to
Ithaca. Wait, my wife is listening, so just be careful.
Okay,
we'll watch it.
I'm really not worried. Well, Molly, we're thrilled to have you join us today, and we really, you know, you've had this lifelong romance with vegetables that started at a time that maybe a lot of people weren't really... that into vegetables. I mean, meat was the primary thing on the plate. How did you get started down this path?
Well, you know, it was really an infatuation from when I was a child. I mean, this might sound totally insane, but I actually loved the frozen vegetables that my mom used to make for dinner. You know how some kids like their mashed potatoes?
Yeah, no, that sounds totally insane to me. I have to be honest.
There's an insane woman on the phone.
You know, it's like, you know, some kids are slapping the gravy on the mashed potatoes and they're in heaven, but I was, you know, mashing the peas and loving those French cut green beans. And I actually, my food literacy was so low at the time, being a city kid, I actually thought the green beans grew, the frozen vegetables grew in my mother's freezer. But I don't know why, I just loved them. And I didn't understand why they took up so little space on the plate. I felt like they needed more room. They needed to be more central. So I've been working ever since I was a kid to make them more central.
Well, I like that. That's very nice. I mean,
we have Chef Robert Wiedemeyer in with us today. He's going to be providing commentary, I'm sure.
I am.
I'm very pleased. Hi, Robert.
How are you?
I'm well. How are
I'm looking
you?
At your book here, and I love it. I just think it's a great book, and
Thank you.
As you well know, I think a lot of people nowadays, and I see that in all my restaurants. You know, are very interested in vegetables.
Yeah, well, you know, so. I kind of have this subtle message on the cover of the book. It's called The Heart of the Plate, and then there's a kale leaf over the word heart. So I'm kind of like trying to subtly tell people that I would love to see more vegetables at the heart of your plate. It doesn't mean you can't put the meat on there if you want to. I'm not one of those, you know, vegetarian people who, you know, hit people over the head who eat meat. It's just like I want there to be so much plant food on your plate that you have hardly any room for anything else.
Let me just ask a question, because we'll talk about the heart of the plate mostly here. But when the Moosewood Cookbook came out, what was the initial reception to it? Because, you know, I'm thinking some meat and potatoes folks probably said it was sort of a hippy-dippy way of approaching food. I mean, what did it take off right from the start, or was there kind of this controversy about it?
No, it did not take off right from the start. There were the kind of book launches we see now didn't exist then. I had a little self-published edition of Spiral Bound, kind of embarrassing now, but you know, I didn't think anybody was going to look at this thing except my friends and my family. So I kept it really informal, and it took years. It trickled in over years. There were maybe, you know, 30 people who bought the first edition, and and people did. I was definitely Little Miss Hippy Dippy. In fact, I think
Hippy
I might
Dippy.
Still be that. You know?
I like it.
That's so far out and groovy.
Groovy. Yeah.
Well, but now over the last 30 years, there's been so much change across the nation when it comes to the products and the produce that's available.
Hey, so, Nikki, yes. You can't get kale now.
Because everybody's
buying kale, right, Molly? I mean, remember Brussels sprouts were like, you know, you couldn't get anybody to eat a Brussels sprout. Now everybody's got Brussels sprouts on the menu.
Yes.
Kale is like off the hook now. You can't get it anywhere.
Everybody's got
I love
Caesar.
It. I love it. But, you know, Brussels sprouts and kale, they used to be last line.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And we get mocked for love them. I mean, tolerating them maybe. But now people like fall down on their knees when you mention Brussels sprouts.
Oh, my God.
I just love it. I love it. And I think the next up is going to be cauliflower.
Yeah, well, I can see that.
Come with you. But when you were writing your book, as you've been, I mean, you've written several books, but when you look at your first book versus this book, I mean, the availability and the farmers markets, I mean, the change across the country.
Unbelievable.
How did that influence what you were putting together?
Oh, totally, Nikki. You know, if you think about it, well, you might not, I don't know, your vintage probably not as seasoned as mine, but.
No, but her husband's is.
But he is. That's okay.
You could not.
He's old and cheap.
A bottle of good olive oil in this country when I started.
Isn't that amazing?
It was just unheard of. I mean, a red bell pepper was a sweet red bell pepper was something to write home about. You know, all bell peppers were green and bitter, and once in a while there'd be a red bell pepper and it'd be this big deal. You know, so yes, absolutely, the produce coming up and being more available and just more gorgeous and more farmers markets, that definitely has influenced, that has enabled cookbook authors who are, you know, plant forward as I am, it makes our job easier. It makes us look good. It's like if the
vegetables
are fantastic and you've got good olive oil, what else do you need?
Right. Well, actually, I mean, there's also been like a rush of books. We just had Domenica Marchetti on the show. She just did.
Oh, I love her.
I know. She's fabulous.
She did a whole homage to the vegetables of Italy.
Yeah exactly.
Yes. Oh, I love that book too.
It's beautiful. It's a great book. Well, let's also talk about words like vegetarian and vegan and what that means to you. And then I kind of want to throw that to Robert, because I feel like a lot of chefs are not receptive, you know, like when
that's changed drastically.
Do you think
though.
So?
I mean, it has for me. And,
okay.
I think across the board for, you know, talented, you know, smart chefs that are owners of restaurants. I mean, if you're not thinking about, you know, vegetables today, well, you're just way behind the eight ball, in that market.
So, Molly, how do you define vegetarian and vegan?
Well, you know, I've been sort of switching up that definition, kind of refining it, because I prefer those descriptions to be about the food rather than about the person.
I like
because
that.
That gives us more flexibility. So here is a beautiful plate of vegetarian food, or here's a plate of vegan food, which simply means it doesn't have any eggs or cheese or animal products on it. It's all plant food, 100% plant. And so other people, someone who might, and Robert, I know you're probably seeing this from the front lines. There are so many people who love their meat, but they want vegetarian food often.
They do. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, they don't want to feel left out or like they don't qualify or they have to join a club and get permission. It's like if you take the labels away from the person and just let everyone eat what they're drawn to, I think it's a happier world.
I think what you've seen across the board now, Molly, is that, you know, back in the day, and I'm going to go back 20 years ago, if someone walked into the restaurant and said, I'm a vegetarian, it was like all they did was they put vegetables on a plate and put it in the steamer.
Right.
And that was
so
it.
Depressing.
And I mean, it was just.
Or a plate of pasta.
It gave no credit to these great you know, vegetables and legumes out there that, you know, nowadays we treasure the small artisanal farmers around the area and we want their stuff.
But I also think, and I think, Molly, this relates to your book, it's not just you can do so much more with vegetables. I mean,
absolutely,
you can really make dishes out of
yes.
them.
Well, let's get to the heart of the... I was going to say, I want to allow you some time to talk about the heart of the plate. Where do all these recipes come from? Because they're
gorgeous.
Yeah, and there's zillions of them.
Thank you so much. You know, I make them up, and I get my inspiration from the vegetables themselves. So to your point, Nikki, about the vegetables getting better, I have a general idea of when I want to write a cookbook that I want to, I want to give every vegetable its moment in the sun, literally and figuratively. But I go through the produce market or I go through the farmer's market, and I get ideas right on the spot when I see them. And the less, the better. The less we do to them, the better. If the vegetables are really in season, mm-hmm. they're really delicious. But, you know, I like to play with the texture. And so in this book, I have everything from raw grated, you know, a whole little ditty on slaws and how you can grate raw vegetables and how the cut, if you're eating vegetables raw, the cut is everything.
Right.
You know, it's so important to have a good relationship with your knife and keep it sharp. And that's the key to cooking vegetables. But at the other end of the textural spectrum, I've gotten into cooking some vegetables, broccoli, parsnip, celery root, cauliflower, cooking until they're very soft, and then making mashes out of them, maybe a touch of cream, touch of roasted garlic, salt and pepper, and, you know, giving mashed potatoes a bunch of siblings on the plate.
Yeah, I'm happy to say Nikki's been mashing parsnips and cauliflower like that. It's great. It's delicious.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. And you can play with, you know, who says you have to have only, you're limited to only one vegetable on the plate. Why not have an assortment, like a collaboration of vegetables? So you can play with the textures. So you can have that mash. But then you can put, I have a chapter on saladitas, which is a cross between a salsa and a salad, like little chopped up fruits and vegetables with herbs. And you can top the cozy mash with a kind of perky saladita. So you get the very, you know, comforting soft food with the kind of perky crunchy food at the same mouthful.
That's right up my alley. That
you,
so
know, you know the thing I've been doing a lot lately too is adding fruit with vegetables. Like, you know, like a pear and turnip puree.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
they call that baby food.
Oh, you know, stop, what? David.
You know, a pear and turnip puree, Molly, is delicious, right?
I love
Brussels sprouts with roasted pears.
He thinks
or
he invented
apples,
this.
You know?
It's baby food.
Oh, stop.
But you know what?
Well, if you leave a little texture and then you put a toasted nut on the side, then it's not baby food.
Right, and you can put some little crunchies on top of it. You know, some little fried leeks or something.
Molly, you don't know, but I'm a tiny little speck, and Robert's a big dude, so I have to be careful.
That's well, funny. So Molly, I know we missed you when you were down here because you were at Six and I on Tuesday. But tell us where you're going to be. Where are you going to be promoting the book? Are you coming back to D.C. or are you going around the country? Tell us what you're doing.
I'm spending a bit of time in New York right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be at the 92nd Street Y at 7:00 tomorrow night in New York. For I don't know if New York.
What, do you go anywhere but synagogues and Y's?
I'm going to be talking to Julia Moskin from the New York Times tomorrow night.
Fabulous.
All right, that's good.
Good.
That'll be so much fun. She says she's going to grill me, and it was very hard for me to not make puns about that one.
Right.
You know what? Hey, Molly, would you do me a favor?
Yes.
How about you come down to D.C. and be a guest at one of my restaurants and we'll just feature your cookbook recipes at Marcel's.
Oh,
Robert,
that would be fabulous.
That is music to my ears.
Wouldn't that be fun? I'd have a lot of fun doing that.
Much fun. Let's do that.
And Robert, how about you invite us for free?
Because you know my
husband. You know what, Mr. Cheapo?
Yeah.
You know that. You know.
If my husband
you know I wouldn't
can
charge
get something
you.
For free,
Molly,
he will.
We're about to take a commercial break, and you're a charter member of the Harvard School of Public Health Nutrition Roundtable, and coming up, we have parents from Montgomery County, Maryland, where we reside, who've organized to pursue and ensure healthy meals for our kids in the public schools, because right now they ain't so healthy. And you were part of starting that sort of national health food health consciousness. And it's still filtering down to the grassroots. It's sort of an interesting segue to that next segment.
Definitely.
I don't suppose you want to stay on the phone. Do you have time?
I would be delighted.
Okay, really?
So let's Molly, let's do
awesome.
This. I'm very
right,
interested in having you come to D.C.
Wait, stop
I'm shutting
selling.
You down.
You're
okay.
selling.
Molly, okay. Well, I really appreciate you joining us, Molly. We're going to keep you on the phone, and then we're going to get in to talk about nutrition and good food at schools, especially locally. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Hillary Howard. Join me October 12th and 13th for the Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember. This year, we have 55 or 30-mile bike rides held at National Harbor Saturday, October 12th, and a 5K in Washington at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Sunday, October 13th. The Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember raises funds and awareness while commemorating the service and sacrifice of law enforcement officers. Go to rideandruntoremember.org to register today.
We're all different, but if we all stand up as one, no one stands alone.
Won't you stand up, stand up, stand up?
One by one, we can change the world. It's up to you and me. On Monday, October 7th, let's all wear our blue shirts for World Day of Bullying Prevention.
Won't you stand up and use your voice?
Get your blue shirt at stompoutbullying.org.
The March of Dimes and AFSEA Nova invite you to the 13th annual Heroines in Technology Gala. This event will honor women who exemplify leadership and are making a difference in our community. From CEOs to rising stars, this year's finalists will be recognized for their significant volunteer contributions at a Black Tie Awards presentation on Friday, November 8th. Heroines in Technology is sponsored by Harris Corporation. All proceeds will benefit the March of Dimes mission to give all babies a healthy start in life. Since 2001, the event has given awards to 73 heroines and raised more than $1.4 million to support the March of Dimes. To learn more about the March of Dimes and to get your tickets to Heroines in Technology, visit marchofdimes.com/metrodc. That's marchofdimes.com/metrodc. And help celebrate the March of Dimes 75th anniversary.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis and our guest co-host, Robert Wiedemeyer. And Molly Katzen is on the phone with us. Molly, you still there?
I'm here. Hi.
Stay with us,
so
Molly.
So she's joining us as our other guest co-host while we talk to Gordon Clark, who is the executive director and founder of Montgomery Victory Gardens. And this group as well. Lindsay Parsons is joining him, and Karen Devitt is joining us too to talk about Real Food for Kids Montgomery. It's a grassroots parents group that promotes wholesome food and drink in the Montgomery County schools where our kids go to school. And I told you before the story. Oh, you got two in there too?
I got two in Montgomery.
I thought you
County.
Were a private school.
Yeah,
I thought you were kind of a snob.
Well,
you sent your kids
not.
To private schools.
I'm but, not. But
our kids, we send our kids with their lunch every day because I don't trust the, we don't trust, Nikki really,
I
doesn't
don't trust.
Trust the lunches
it's not that I
there.
Don't trust. I don't like it. It doesn't look, anything that you can peel off, like airline food, I'm not interested.
But I mean, you know, so, and I'm delighted that Molly stayed on the phone. Gordon, why don't you give us the 411 on the group and how you got started?
Or how you guys got together. Yeah. Let's find that out.
Well, we had some common interests. Montgomery Victory Gardens is about building a more robust and sustainable food shed in Montgomery County. We teach people how to grow food. We connect them to local food events. And I met Karen and Lindsay last fall when they started Real Food for Kids Montgomery, which is focused very much on school food.
Right. And how did you two get together and start this program?
Gordon contacted us, I think, and we had lunch and...
No, but what about the two of you? I mean, was you?
Karen and I.
Yes.
Karen contacted me after I sent a letter to my local listserv that I had sent to the Board of Education after attending a summit or forum that Gordon had been part of called Food Security in Maryland, I believe. And I had written a letter, you know, just to the Board of Education saying you're moving in the wrong direction in terms of centralizing food. Sort of had a change of opinion on that since regarding the fact that you can prepare fresh food in a central kitchen and then ship it out to the individual schools.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, Karen saw the letter, contacted me, and we had lunch.
Okay, and so now where is everything? Like, Karen, tell us what's going on in the schools at this moment.
Well, we started out by, we've been complaining for years to all our friends, and finally it got to the point where... we just said, well, let's do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have started this organization, and now we have representation in 87 schools.
Wow.
Out of 202. So we're really working
That's
toward full representation. And we have over 600 supporters. So our strategy is to just build a grassroots pressure mm-hmm. to make changes.
And what are the what are you looking for? What is it that you're trying to do?
Well, we have a number of priorities. One is about communication and transparency with parents, because there's a lot of foods that are served in the schools, in particular a la carte and vending, mm-hmm. That parents aren't aware of because they don't appear on the menus and they don't appear on the website of MCPS.
Yeah, the vending machines are death.
Well, there are two different kinds of vending machines. There are vending machines that are now have approved, wellness policy approved items, and then there's vending machines that have things like Coke and candy that are not approved, and those ones are now dark all during the school day. That happened like 10 or 15 years ago, but also another 30 minutes after the school day thanks to our advocacy work.
That's terrific.
All right, yeah. So let me jump in and ask Molly a question. Molly, you know, we probably should give an autographed copy of The Heart of the Plate to Ike Leggett, who's the county executive. Mm-hmm. That might help. But, I mean, have you sort of seen around the country these kinds of movements that are basically continuing the revolution on a different scale?
Definitely. I think it's not even something to write home about anymore. That if a school has a garden, that's almost, in some areas, it's almost becoming standard to have a little bit of the yard devoted to some garden space and to have people talking about healthy food and really being careful of what kind of vending they're having in the schools. When people ask me what trends I see, I sometimes talk about what I hope will happen rather than what I think is happening, but the kind of hope and reality kind of merge, you know. So it looks excellent. I mean, it's very encouraging.
Well, Gordon, let's talk about gardens at schools. What does it mean?
Sure. Well, gardens are far and away the best way to introduce kids to fresh food and to get them to like fresh food. Mm-hmm. Kids, overwhelmingly, if they participate in growing some food and they can taste it fresh out of the garden, they will like it. And it's ironic because this is one of the things that we hear from the Montgomery County's Food Nutrition Services most is like, well, we try serving vegetables, but the kids don't like them.
Right.
It's like, well, what are we doing to get them to enjoy this flavor? So even though gardens are the number one way to get kids to enjoy food, and they're happening all over the country, there are only 36 of them in the 202 schools in Montgomery County. As a matter of fact, up until a couple years ago, believe it or not, they were unofficially not allowed to have vegetable gardens in schools in Montgomery.
That.
Well, that's one of the things our group changed. One of the first things we did.
Congratulations.
We let the campaign on that.
Well, let me ask you to jump in with a question, because Montgomery County is one of the three or four wealthiest counties in America.
I think it's 12th, actually,
well,
but it's up there.
If I'm there, it's probably 40th, but that's another problem. But no, the question is some of the I mean, is there a certain kind of hubris that affluence creates where people go, well, we don't need to, that's BS, because, you know, we've got these well-funded schools and they're eating so well and I don't need to worry about that. Are the parents just on Mars about that?
I mean, Karen and Lindsay can speak to this perhaps better than I can, but my experience with parents in the county is that a lot of them that I meet do not like the food that the kids are being served. And many of them didn't even know about the policy against school vegetable gardens until we made it public, until we got it changed. So I don't think it's so much that there's a lack of caring. I think also a lot of it has to do with the fact that this is a huge bureaucracy.
Exactly.
I mean, it is a $2.23 billion a year bureaucracy in Montgomery County schools. Very hard to change things like it is in any big bureaucracy.
Well, so let me ask you both, Karen and Lindsay, is it all about money? I mean, at the end of the day, is it about the schools making money? And is that why they're not serving healthy and tasty food to the kids?
We know that you can serve healthy food to kids and make money.
Right.
On our forum on November 2nd, we are going to bring in Tony Geraci, who has been doing the food in Memphis schools for the last 2 years. And he has made $10 million a year selling healthy food to kids for each of those years, because what he did was he went in and he started a farms on county and school land. Mm-hmm. He put $250,000 into starting them up, and he got $3 million worth of product off of them.
Amazing.
So you can serve healthy food to kids and make money. It is not about money. I think it is more about what you believe is nutritious. And we believe that freshly prepared food that comes preferably from local sources is nutritious, whereas right now what's served in Montgomery County is more or less purchased processed food that
it's
is then reheated
processed
in the schools.
Right, right.
I mean, if I can say
yes,
something for
ahead
a second. I mean, I've been involved in this for a while now with the Obama administration and about what we feed our kids in schools. And, you know, I'd like to go back
to, like, name dropping, Robert.
No,
just
but
drop
I mean,
a name
I just
here
wanted
or
to
there.
Say,
yeah,
so,
I was saying to the president.
I just want to say that, you know, Alice Waters, who, you know, we all know very well, has been screaming and jumping up and down for years about what we've been doing in schools. And, you know, we're fighting big business here. This is a big thing to get your arms around to try to beat. And the only way to do it is do what you are doing, the three of you are doing here right now, and what a lot of chefs are doing around the country to try to make awareness of it. But we're only making a small dent. And the only way it's going to really change is if parents get deeply involved and say, you know what, I don't want my kids eating this crap.
All right.
It's
well,
not good for them.
I'm
going to
say Real Food Montgomery has a new member.
You know, I mean, it's
sign this dude up.
I mean, for one of the most powerful countries in the world, we are about the stupidest people in the world for what we feed our kids in this country and in the schools across the board and what we eat. And, you know, we
but
need
think-
to do something about it, and people are doing something about it, but it's a slow-moving thing, and it's thank God we have individuals in this room like everybody here and the good listeners out there from your show that believe in this, I hope.
Well, we do. Unfortunately, we got about a minute to go. So
let's
I want to
talk
make
about
sure.
your forum, and let's make sure everybody knows about it.
November 2nd, School Food Forum, creating a vision for fresh, real food in Montgomery County Public Schools. You can go to either of our websites, Real Food for Kids Montgomery or Montgomery Victory Gardens. You'll find information about it there. We're going to have Tony Geraci, Marla Kaplan, the head of food and nutrition services from Montgomery County
Where
Public Schools.
Where and what time?
Is going to be there. Why don't
you
take
the
it over?
Lutheran Church of St. Andrew in Silver Spring.
Okay.
And it's going to run from 9:30 to 2.
Okay, terrific.
Saturday, November 2nd.
Excellent.
All right.
And
all
we've
right.
gotten all the county council members to sign on to our honorary host committee, as
Very
well
good.
As two state
Let's,
senators.
They better hold
and
them
Van
accountable.
Hollen and Sarbanes.
All right.
Excellent.
Well, thank
Excellent.
You all very much. Molly, thanks for sitting in on this.
I'm so inspired by what they're doing. It's beautiful. And thanks
well,
for having me
you're,
on.
You're the innovator that got this whole thing started, so thanks
no,
to you, too.
There's more work to be done, and you guys are all doing it. It's just beautiful.
All right. Great. Well, thanks very much.
Look forward to seeing you in Washington, D.C., Molly.
Yeah, he's got you now, Molly. All right, so now we're going to turn the subject. Let's get Joe Tiss up to the microphone. Joe is the executive chef at Paladar, Latin Kitchen and Rum Bar. At kind of
Paladar.
Right at the...
Paladar.
What did I say?
You said Paladar.
Oh,
said
because you know why? Because Richard
because
Dreyfuss was in Moon over Paladar, and I got confused.
Okay, it's Paladar.
It's Paladar at the Bethesda Rockville line, and Joe's brought in a bunch of food.
Snacking on his plantains.
Yeah.
Delicious.
So here's the question. Well, first thing is, why don't you give us the 411 on the restaurant and on you?
Well, basically, we're a Latin restaurant. This is our fourth location that we've opened. We started in Cleveland, Ohio. Then we went 6 hours east into Annapolis, and then we went to Hallandale Beach, Florida. And then we most recently just opened Rockville.
All right. And
tell us about the concept, because you guys have a mix of Latin cuisines, right? You've got Cuba, South America, Central
what
America.
I mean,
tell us what you guys got
What
going
I
on.
Always like to tell people is that we start in Mexico and we work our way all the way down to Argentina.
Okay.
We basically,
And then head over to Cuba?
Head over to Cuba, the Latin Caribbean, of course. Mm-hmm. We get inspiration from Latin recipes and Latin food, and then we interpret it into the Paladar way of presenting it.
Which is what? Tell us.
It's basically, you know, we let everybody know that we're not authentic dishes. We'll take inspiration from different areas. And so
Are you Americanizing it? What does that mean?
Somewhat.
Okay.
We're making it approachable for the public.
Okay.
You know, and luckily this day and age, people know what pupusas are. They know what ropa vieja is. They know what plantains are. So it's wonderful. It's actually very easy for me to talk about it. And, you know, people know exactly what you're talking about. Of course, you're eating the chips. I don't think
I've
you left anybody
the whole
for
time,
anybody.
Right? They're so yummy.
Come on, Nikki.
You can help yourself.
I'm going to get some of that food up in front of you.
So tell us about, like, so for people who aren't familiar with your concept, about some of the dishes on the menu and about the location. Just give it for people who
Not
haven't been yet.
You know, basically, like you said, right across from where White Flint Mall basically
used to be.
It's the North Bethesda Market. We're right across from Whole Foods at the intersection there.
You have a nice outdoor patio, too, don't you?
It's an amazing outdoor patio. And
yeah,
we do happy
pretty.
Hour on the bar side patio, so get it while the weather's still nice outside.
By the way, Nikki, Robert and I are enjoying this.
Good. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about the rum bar.
Terrific.
Because you have this huge rum bar there, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. Robert Wiedemeyer and David can't speak right now because their mouths are full.
I can speak.
Okay.
Is Molly still on the phone?
No, she's gone. We'll be back in just a sec. We're going to talk about all about the rum bar, and I think there's another drink in our future. We'll be back in just a sec.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, dear, we come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care. Then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
On Thursday, October 17th, join the Wounded Warrior Project for the Red, White, and Barbecue Charity Golf Event. The funds raised will assist service members who have been injured in the line of duty. All proceeds from the Red, White, and Barbecue Charity Golf Event will be donated to the nonprofit organization Wounded Warrior Project and will support a full range of programs and services for this generation of injured veterans and their families. For more information, visit redwhiteandbarbecue.com. That's redwhiteandbarbecue.com.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back on Foodie and the Beast, and I just stuffed a fish taco into my mouth and palate arm.
At least it was a fish taco.
Well, it wasn't a... Never mind.
I'm going to take a bite of it now. We're going to share it.
You're killing me. This is a family show.
That's what happens when you drink before noon.
Right, that's exactly.
I got no problem with that. So before we get back to the show, just want to thank the folks that make this show possible, our friends at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, the two founding farmers. I'm going to cough again. Hold on.
Okay.
Sorry about that. No, I can do this.
You
farmers,
got it?
Fishers,
right,
and bakers.
Mm-hmm.
Union Market. We're coming back to Union Market on November 24th for a live remote.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, it will be fun.
Black's Restaurant Group. Unfortunately, not anything that belongs to Robert Wiedemeyer, but we should be. Early Mountain Vineyard, Carpenter Shelter, our friends at the American Land Board and the Virginia Wine Board are all folks that support the show. Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Chef.
Thanks for nothing.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And let's get back to this conversation with
Chef.
Joe. I mean, this.
No, I want to talk about the rum bar.
I want to talk about this food.
I want to talk about the rum bar.
All right, talk about the rum bar.
Tell us about the rum bar.
Rum bar. We have over 50 different types of rum, which is really, really fun. Mm. There's super aged rums, there's aged, there's spiced, there's silver rums, lots of different flavor profiles. And one of the things that people don't actually realize about rum, you know, if you're a bourbon drinker, we have rum that, you know, will fit that profile.
Okay.
We have an El Dorado, which is wonderful. It's aged very similarly to bourbon.
I feel like rum gets a bum rap.
I love rum.
Like, I think people think of rum as like rum and Coke and...
Right.
I don't know.
And that's the extent of it.
And I mean, clearly we have cocktails on our show. But I don't feel like there's a lot of rum use these days. I think people are looking more at gin and vodkas and...
I don't think you could tell our bartenders that.
Okay.
They would strongly disagree.
Bourbon. I mean, like bourbon and rye. Like, I think like you're finding those
Absolutely.
In more cocktails. Do you know what I mean?
It's fun. What's fun with the different rums that we have, there's a lot of similar flavor characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use those classic cocktails and actually input
rum in it.
And it works great. Mm-hmm. We have a Havana sidecar, actually, that uses rum.
Interesting.
You know, and then different things like that. We've done a couple of other different... you know, we've done a Cuban Manhattan before, which works really, really well. But it's great. I mean, you know, there's good aperitifs basically for rum. There's good dessert rums. There's lots of different things.
We're going to have to bring your rum guys in, and we'll have to do a little something with that.
I prefer rum over cognac. Huh? I used to be a big cognac drinker.
And then he would get on his Harley and ride, baby, ride.
Ride.
And get the hell out of the way. Joe, what's your background? Because to be able to effectively, regardless of the American influences, effectively, you know, deliver this stuff and have it taste as good.
Well, my father's actually Spanish. My mother's American. My father's from Spain, from Valencia. I went to high school in Spain.
Is that where you're from?
My father's from.
Okay.
So, hey, my father, your father.
But and
not also, Valencia, but Valencia.
Valencia, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've lost my accent over the years. It's
been
a while.
You need Phillips, King Philip's lisp.
We were talking about that last night.
I've also had the pleasure of traveling in South America. I've been to Chile about 5 times, different parts of Chile. Mm. I've been to Brazil. I was lucky enough to about a year and a half ago to go to Brazil. And, you know, it's part of the food that I love. I love the different flavors, the sweet, the spicy, you know, the different elements that you can bring in with the Latin food.
Well, and so let's talk. So now you're cooking here.
Yes, I am.
But not for long? Or tell us what
you're
doing. Well,
you know, we have some future restaurants opening. We have one opening after the first of the year in Tyson's Corner. Mm-hmm. And then in the late spring, we're going to be opening in Gaithersburg behind the Rio, in that new development that's going back there.
Which is massive.
And I'm looking forward to that project. I think, you know, we're right in the middle of everything. We're in the heart. We're right in the center of the entire town center there. So I'll be traveling around. Basically, my responsibility, I'm more or less the corporate chef. And, you know, I travel around, open the restaurants, and move on and let somebody else take over.
Well, so you keep saying we. Who is the we behind this concept?
Well, we have one main partner, Andy Himmel, very great guy, young, energetic. I love working for him, and you know, I work hand in hand with him. We also have Sean Lantona from Cleveland, Ohio. He was the general manager out in the Cleveland store. Okay. So him and I basically have the same responsibilities. He trains the GMs, I train the chefs.
Okay, cool.
And so it's really, really fun for us.
Okay, so for people who haven't been yet, tell everybody where it is, where they can find you. You need to get on Twitter. Like, let's make all that happen.
You can at least find us on Facebook, Woodglen Drive, 11333 Woodglen Drive in Rockville, Maryland.
Excellent. But it's right at the Pike.
It's right off the Pike.
It's right up the road from where we live.
Right north Bethesda Market. So I
it's
look
our neighborhood restaurant.
Well, I look forward to seeing you this week.
All right, man. You were great. Thanks,
Thank you.
Joe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, so we're going to go back to Domingo. I got a question for you. You're a visiting mixologist. You're not going to be at J&G forever, so you're going to return to your W Hotel in Boston, right?
Isn't that correct? Yeah, I'll be here through the opening.
So how hard is it? It's not hard. You're going to train a staff, but how hard is it to get to make sure that your standards and recipes and all that are maintained and that you have everything in place to keep customers educated?
We're on radio. So
you held up something, but it's theater of the mind. And it wasn't his middle finger, by the way.
I'm a firm believer that, you know, all the bartenders were hired, obviously, because they have a passion for it, and they even come up with good drinks. But much like, again, extension of the kitchen, you go into a kitchen, you know, say, you know what, maybe I'll just eyeball the salts. I mean, recipes are recipes is a recipe. So when we come up with something and we work on it for a while and we finally nail it down and to where all the balance is there and, you know, the sweet and the acid, and when it's down, then we present that and we train them, and you just you.
Are you saying you put acid in your?
No.
Oh, wait till the next one. Yeah.
Come on. Yep. You know
again,
better than
stand up.
I might become
boys.
A regular customer. I don't know. I'm just
bad
asking.
Boys. Now they're showing their age.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The next one called Studio 54.
That's right.
But you have trained the staff at this point, and
absolutely,
they can execute what you're doing,
and they're very excited about it too.
I'm sure they are.
Let me ask you a question, Domingo, on that, okay?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, when we asked him how he controls things, he presented us with a little jigger, okay,
right,
that measures how much liquor or whatever you're pouring into it. It's funny, the psychology behind that, because a lot of people that go to restaurants or bars, and when the bartenders or the mixologists, or the chef tenders or whatever we're calling them nowadays, pulls one of those out, people for some reason in their mind think they're being ripped off, or look at their measuring.
No, actually, I think they think they're amateurs. Like that they don't know.
However,
before.
You know, I think that with our drinks, and the reason I have jiggers that have multiple measurements in it, because we use multiple. Even when we'll jigger our lemon juice, so it's not just.
Well, I understand why you're doing it, but I think that
public perception.
I think if you're doing a bunch of different moves and a bunch of other ingredients, people get that you're building something as opposed to just
measuring that to your earlier
thing, like a rum and coke. If I went like that,
well,
and,
right.
people also understand that the way you make money is to have portion control too. So,
and
you know,
no, I mean it's very true. But I agree with Robert. I think that, you know, given this world of mixologists or chef tenders or whatever, there is sort of like, if I walked into Robert's kitchen and he was using like a measuring cup as he made his sauce, I'd be like, does he not know what he's doing? Do you know what I mean? Like,
the answer would be yes.
To that point, we also do. You know, with the gold, we flame oranges. We do a lot of interesting tinctures in-house. Mm-hmm. So if you see one of our bartenders using a jigger, but then they flame an orange or they do something where they're putting on a show and you're like, oh, okay, he does know what he's doing.
Right, of course. You know what I'm saying.
No. I get what you're saying. And if it were just that, I think you have to bring a performance to it.
Exactly.
And you have to build that into it.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, kids, I have to jump in.
Wait, he's got one more drink to serve. He's just going to tell us what it is.
But just real quick, I may say, what Domingo's doing is exactly what he should be doing with that jigger, because he's doing very complex drinks.
I'm with you.
And they've got to be measured out, so it's the consistency of the drink being done properly every time you go in there and get it.
Speaking of Astra lemon juice, you go right.
Guys, I got to jump in. Tell us the name of this drink, and you've got 10 seconds to tell us what's in it.
So this is a... it's a fig sidecar. Again, it's
beautiful.
A twist on a classic with some brandy, some Creole shrub.
Mm-hmm.
We make a fig reduction sauce. There's a dehydrated fig on there, a little cracked black pepper.
So it's very easy to make.
I'm going to jump in real quick. That was Domingo Martin Barreras, who is the visiting mixologist helping J&G at the W Hotel get their new concept cooked up. You heard so much on the show today, and there's so much more to know and hear and figure out what's going on in the D.C. area. If you go to thelistareyouonit.com, that's Nikki's website. There are about 35,000 subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
It's free to subscribe, and you find out there are hundreds of events, things happening all across the area. Go there. You can follow her on Twitter.
At Nikki Nellis.
Shameless plugs.
Mm-hmm.
And at 10 of 1 every Sunday, you can hear her on WTOP 103.5. FM.
Okay, well, the show is ending. We want to thank all of our guests who joined us today. First and foremost, Robert Wiedemeyer. Thank you for
having me. I love being here.
Excellent. Molly Katzen, who was terrific. Chef Joe Tiss, thank you so much.
You.
The folks from Real Food for Kids, Montgomery and Gordon.
Montgomery Victory Gardens.
Montgomery Victory Gardens. We really had such a terrific show. All the guys from the W. Marcus, I never got your last name. Do you want to
Carlson.
Say it? Okay.
That's
and
a great name. Marcus Carlson. Alliteration.
Hurry. Okay. Say like Domingo's last name, please.
Domingo Martin Barreras.
Excellent. We had a great show today. Thank you, everybody.
Mucho gusto.
And we're going to talk about your hair later after the show.
And everybody, please have a delicious week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting.